Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. I'm Christine, as your host at Voices of Women. I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom, and we are getting ready for our 27th annual Women of Wisdom Conference. It's here in Seattle, Washington, February 15th to the 17th. Our mission is to empower the feminine dreams and spirits within all of us through authentic, intimate, transformative, and healing experiences where we share our stories, acknowledge our wisdom, and transform our personal and collective consciousness. We also have a book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. And it's kind of like being at our conference. We have many of the talks from some very famous internationally known authors, and even participant stories and art and poetry. And you can check out the book at Amazon, of course, but also womenofwisdom.org. And you can see our conference and all the offerings we have in February for our 27th conference. Just go to womenofwisdom.org and look for the conference 2019. It'll take you to the page where all the workshops are listed, and you can register there. So for today's show, we're going to have a presenter who is giving a workshop at the conference. Her name is Sheila Delaney Duke, and she is a professional coach, speaker, and facilitator, and has spent more than 15 years working with groups and individuals, helping us to know ourselves and the fullness of our own unseen and internal resources. She facilitates healing and remembering experiences through heart-centered healing, emotional resonance, and holographic visioning. Sheila is a guardian and keeper of mattering, a midwife of remembering, and a threshold lantern priestess, illuminating the crossroads and the in-between places. She's giving a workshop on Sunday, February 17th, on Rewild Your Holy Hunger, the Sacred Work of Activating Your Desires. So welcome, Sheila.
Thank you so much, Chris. Boy, that's fun to hear read out loud, to hear it in a different way.
Yes. Well, and it's great. And we're so glad to have you at the conference this year and have you on the show. So I'm going to have you start first with your story, how you got to where you are today. What drove you to your inward journey to find your own voice as a woman, a leader, and a teacher?
Thank you. So I would say I was one of those kids who always had one foot in the world and one foot in another, entirely of my own making. And so I had a really vivid, wild imagination. And I also had some gifts of perception that I now understand were such. And fortunately, I was in a family where my dad made space for this. So I could come to him and talk about, hey, Dad, there's, you know, when I was seven, there's a man at my window every night. And it just dawned on me, that's weird because I'm on the second story. And after his, you know, paternal wait, there's a man at your window moment, he would sit down and talk to me and say, oh, does that feel scary? Does that feel protective? Does that feel helpful? And we'd talk about this man that I would see at my window, and I started to describe him, and I remember my dad's face as he paused and he finished the description. And he said, oh, he used to visit me too as a child. And so there was this wonderful opening when I was really young that said, it's okay to wonder about and have experiences that are beyond what is felt and touched. And then, as necessarily happens, as we come out of childhood, those doors close. And I had that almost systematically shut down culturally as I learned, wait, what's okay, what's socially acceptable? Maybe my dad's okay with this, but not clearly not everybody is. And I moved into an evangelical church environment where there was a lot of fear of the unknown, really loving, kind people, and a real systemic fear. And so I really shut down these external gifts or these internal gifts and started looking into the world and realizing, oh, there are other ways to be known. It turns out I'm smart, and it turns out I fall on the right line of whatever random person decided is pretty in the world. I was athletic enough. I was all of those things. And so the shift went external. Up until about my 30s, when the gifts, as happens, will make themselves known. And I like to say, you know, the universe had to hit me with the 2x2, the 2x4, and then the 4x4 to really get my attention. And I had about, I guess it was 8 years ago now, I was struck by this random onset of chronic nerve pain in my shoulder. And if you can imagine, you know, I go to the doctor, I come home, a couple days later, I'm left a voicemail message that says, pardon me, we've got good news, we've got a diagnosis, here's what it is. It's called Parsonage-Turner syndrome. You're going to have chronic pain for up to 2 years. It's going to be excruciating, so we'll just put you on oxy. It'll be fine. And the good news, it'll abate. And at the end of those 2 years, you're going to lose function of your arm from shoulder to fingertip, and that'll last about another couple of years, and then you'll be good. Call us if you have any questions. Click. I have small children at home. It was earth-shattering, and I couldn't believe this is what I was going into. And that's exactly how it played out. But what that did is it took me on an internal journey like only chronic acute pain can, where I have to find internal reserves. I have to seek internal understanding of what is this thing ravaging my body that is robbing me of my ability to take care of the things in the world that I thought I was designed to take care of, to do the things, perform the acts that I'm here to do. And as the paralysis set in, I started to really wonder, what is it that I've created in my life that I want to reach for the salt on the table? And I've created an environment where I physically cannot reach out my hand to grab the salt. And I started to wonder about wanting and about desire and all the ways I had shut myself down from that. And so it really was an excruciating and beautiful lesson in paying attention and in remembering it's worth wanting, period, anything at all. So that was my most recent awakening, I'll say, that took me back into the internal journey and reacquainted me with a lot of my internal gifts and a lot of the ways that I'm most joyful to be used in the world. And that's more about who I am than what I'm doing, which is kind of earth-shattering for somebody who was an attorney, who was a banker, who, you know, it was all about being out in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's quite a journey, and not uncommon. You know, a lot of I think women particularly, you know, grow up with that intuition and seeing things, and then it's shut down, and then it comes, you know, things come back when you start exploring that inner journey, as you said. And it is mm-hmm. often the 2x4s that hit us that make us go into that. So, and woman wisdom is all about the divine feminine. So let's talk about how that works with you and your work in life now.
Mm. For somebody who had overfunctioned in the masculine for a very long time, and I'm talking about when I was an attorney, there were days truly I would bind my breasts, and I had very, very short hair. Even though I was always pulled to the feminine, to the mysterious, to stories, to imagination, the feminine showing up in my life now is just so rich and really allows me on my best days to live with a sense of surrender. It would be lovely to say I lived in that state all of the time. That is, as we know, most of us, not my normal state. But I remember what it feels like now. I have a felt experience that allows me to work through my day with a sense of wonder, a sense of enchantment, a sense of surrender, and allowing there to be enough time. Of course, as a mother of two very, very busy teenage girls who don't drive yet, you know, I think it's very, very easy to get caught up in the stuff in life. And who brought a jacket and who didn't bring a jacket, and who has pneumonia and who's got to be where by when, all of those kinds of things. The very same acts, when infused by the divine feminine for me, allow me to move through those with a sense of presence and receiving. And again, at my best, when I'm most clear, when I've taken care of my rituals and my body and my spirit and my emotional and mental bodies over the course of the morning or the day, I can go through those really deeply appreciating, not that I'm on the freeway in traffic, but that I have three giggling, chatting, fine-minded young girls in the back of my car who are learning to be fierce and powerful soccer players. And there's a sense of delight that comes with that, even if I am stuck in traffic, you know, for half an hour, or if I spend 4 hours in the car one day. It changes everything. It changes how I sit down to write. It changes how I invoke the sacred in my conversations with my clients, whether that's dealing with a corporate CEO or whether that's dealing with somebody who's just wanting to grow and looking for more spiritual mentorship, I hold the sacred with great intention in my life now. It's really delicious.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to get into the topic of your workshop, because I think this is probably an avenue to find that, bring that feminine to your life is, what does it mean to you to rewild your holy hunger? What does that invoke for you?
So, as we talked about when I was younger, and I think we as women, time of infinite youth, right, where there is nothing but today and there's just me and my mud pies, that which I want to do with this moment is ever present to me. I want to go make mud pies in the backyard, and either I am able to or my mom is in my way because she wants me to do a thing. You know, it's very simple. As that becomes more convoluted and we start to have stories about who we're supposed to be, we've got voices in our heads that are telling us, you know, here are the 10 other things you could be doing with this moment. You could be doing dishes. You could be washing clothes. You could be dusting. You could be working. And then on the flip side, you could be walking. You could be communing with a tree. You could be doing, you know, nurturing your sacred. But we're so aware of the 10 different poles on the very same moment in time. And what I have found and what I am leaning into more and more, both for my clients, but really especially for myself, because, of course, this is my journey as well, is that desire is the way through all of that. And really learning to discern and trust, what do I desire, not just want to do with my time right now, but not what do I want to get done, what do I desire to be a part of? And the rewilding of that desire is about bringing it back to a more natural state for us, bringing it back to that place of eternal youth where I can say, I want nothing more than to stick my fingers in really high quality mud and make a fabulous mud pie. And so that rewilding takes off all the stories. It allows us to be more innately ourselves. It allows us to be more unapologetically full of desire, full of vitality and longing and activity that is internally driven, that draws us forward into action or into stillness, as the case may be. That's really what it is. So that rewilding part is about what I'm looking for. It's like undomesticating our nature. And then the desire is about magnetizing ourselves and the world around us so that we can set a resonance that allows us to meet life in a way that brings us more joy. Yeah. And more love, frankly. More the light.
Yeah. Well, I would love for you to get, something concrete, like steps for our audience of how do you find what you and know this, what you really want and your desire.
Oh, I love that you asked that. Yeah. So, a couple of things. So first, what I'm going to say is it doesn't even matter what we want. I won't say it's unimportant. I want to, honor what we want. The thing itself, the thing that matters is the act of wanting, of desiring, of practicing that. It's a craft or a skill or a discipline that we can grow by doing it more and more and more. And so let me find my way to the concrete, and I'll provide an exercise that we can all practice. But one of the biggest learnings I had from a set of my teachers kind of along my way is that it's perfectly fine to want contradictory things, but there is nothing inherently wrong with that. And I think we as women can get so stuck. Boy, I know I did. I lived in this place for such a long time. What do I want? What do I want? How do I need to know what I want? I want, and of course it's not about cars, but I want a blue car and I want a red car. How do I choose? Which one do I put my energy behind? But the point isn't the form. It's not the structure of the thing that we desire. It's the act of desiring it at all that is the most important, that is the most nurturing, that is the most love-filled act. So, for example, what is that car to me? It's the ability to get my kids around. It's the ability for me to travel in something that gives me just a little bit more joy than four wheels and a steering wheel, four tires on the ground and a steering wheel. And then the more we practice that desiring, the more discernment we're able to learn as we come to know our flavors of desiring. What does that look like, sound like, taste like for us? So a very concrete example, and I had teachers who took us through this really beautiful exercise, where we picked five or six different things. And for those of your listeners who are journalers, you can journal this. For those who are kinesthetic, you can energize it with dance or with movement or with walking. Bring it to life with your imagination and your thoughts. But choose five things. And really imagine, for example, being 5 years out. And what is it like to have that thing? And really fill out a day. So, for example, what I did in this, and this is, these teachers are through Lucid Living, and they've been such a goddess and for me. One of mine was, say, 5 years from now, I can picture within the bounds of my current life, having healthy, happy, thriving kids, having a rich, nourishing marriage, having work that is meaningful to me, and I journaled that. And I really worked through, what does it look like to wake up in that, to have lunch in that, to have a shower in that kind of a day, really getting very concrete. And what's it like to go to bed at the end of the day wanting that, or have it experiencing that life, which just sounds rich and nourishing and wonderful to me. The next thing I chose was, okay, well, let's break outside of that box and imagine, what if in 5 years I was a writer and a healer living in a stone cottage in Ireland, all by myself, with no commitments and no responsibility to anybody else, completely off the grid, and how delicious was that? And I noticed in my own mind the battle that I had to do with the fact I had written my family out of something that I wanted. And so I had to give myself permission to say, this doesn't mean I don't love my family. It doesn't mean I don't adore my children and delight in them. This is just another exercise of wanting. That also sounds delicious and nourishing and fulfilling for me. So I filled out, what would a day in a stone cottage look like, where I'm lighting my fire and walking out on the cliffs, and what are the sounds and what are the tastes? What is the food like that I'm eating? And so taking that and acknowledging those two, if I'm picking a particular date, let's say January 14th, 2024, and I'm imagining these 2 days, the conflict is perfectly fine. The exercise, the universe is wise enough to discern from these things what sits at the heart of what I want. And you can probably hear it. The listeners can probably hear it. What I want is to feel nourished. What I want is to feel enchanted. What I want is to feel connected to something bigger than me. And I want a sense of self-care, of there being space for me in my world. And so as you write through, say, these 5 days or five things, what are five items that I want? What would it feel like to handle this kind of a frying pan? I mean, you can take it really to base examples versus this kind of a frying pan. And it doesn't matter the conflicts that are inherent in that, you know, when we're bound to the three-dimensional world of form, shake themselves out. And what we're starting to talk about is the substance and the function of the desire. What does that invoke for you? Helpful? Muddy?
Well, it's interesting. And I guess you would just have to do it. I mean, there's a lot of internal work here and sitting with what these desires are and what they mean for you, and then what truly resonates. So writing those out, because yeah, we all have those kinds of desires, and some aren't practical, and we go, oh, I could never do that. But sitting with them and writing them out, it might bring something out, an alternative, like, well, I can't go to Ireland and live in a cottage, but how could I bring that essence to my life here? I would think that would happen. One of my questions is, in order to do this also, how do you get to discharging the old constricting stories? What steps you can help people to do this? Because you also, in order to move into this holy hunger and this putting forth your desires and your wants and putting them into your life, imagine you have these old stories that you have to discharge them.
Oh, yeah. The old story. I don't want to step over this. You know, you even mentioned this, that it comes up, will come up for all of us. This isn't practical. ergo, I cannot want it. And I say, want away. You want a flying spaceship that will take you to the moon for lunch? Want it. Exercise the muscle of desiring that. And the while choice is very, very high magic, it comes a little bit later. So then to the stories of, well, this isn't practical, I can't want this, and all the ways, this is how we domesticate our desire. This is how we plank by plank build the fences that hem us in. And so in order to start to dismantle that, the very first step, of course, is to lean into being an observer of ourselves and really leaning into the gift that we all have, the ability we all have to bear witness to our experience even as we're having it, to start to notice the stories, to notice if you're writing and the pen is moving and, you know, the ink is staining a page with a story of desire and suddenly your pen stops and your hand falters, what's going on right there, right in that moment? And a really good one for me would be exactly that voice of, this isn't practical, acknowledging it. And, you know, I think we can also get stuck in, how do we deconstruct it in a way that helps us make sense of it so it can go away? And in my experience, that is not entirely necessary. And that's another way that we can create barriers, and we take down some planks off the fence on the south side, but we add them to the fence on the north side, right? By saying, okay, I'm going to deconstruct this story, and I can't proceed until I understand how the story got into place. That's not to say those stories aren't important, and understanding them and the wisdom that can be gained from those isn't potent. I do a lot of work with story, but in this case, just acknowledging, going, oh, well, who said it isn't practical? Well, okay, me, and it isn't practical. Great. I'm going to want this anyway. And you can weave that into the new story. What is it like to want something, genuinely desire a thing that is not practical? And work that in. And it might be part of the story where you're walking down with your spaceship and you can carry it under your arm because it expands when you get to where you want to go. And everyone on the street is looking at you, but you feel brave and you lean into an archetype that says, I am a warrior. I am a trendsetter. I am an innovator. It's the first time somebody's going to do this. And I'm going to be her. And it can be a story that starts to invoke courage. It can start to invoke that wild part of ourselves, the wild of the divine feminine, that then when married wisely and in leadership of the masculine within us, that then makes stuff happen and penetrates into the world, our desires in a way that they can start to take form.
Mm-hmm. And it makes me think, okay, so you have this desire, you have children you have to take care of and want to see them grow mm-hmm. and be a great mother for them. And you have this desire to be in a cottage in Ireland and have this alone time. Who's to say you can't, oh, take a month sabbatical and put that into your life to fill that need in a way that would work for your current situation? So I would think it would bring up, creative ideas that could resonate with those desires.
It's really potent medicine. Just to practice the act of wanting is to expand our view and to do exactly what you say, which is start to see different ways that we can construct our reality to allow more things that look like they're in conflict with each other to actually complement and bless one another. So, for example, me with my work, I really love what I do, and I bring a lot of myself because I delight in the joy, and it's as much for the people that I work with, whether individuals or groups, as it is for me in the nourishing and the refueling and the recharging the batteries. And it looks on the face of it like that's going to conflict with my commitments to my family if, for example, I'm traveling or leading a retreat somewhere else. In fact, when I'm at my best and when we are doing family well, they actually complement and bless each other, and it facilitates connection, and we have opportunities to cheer one another on. Again, in an ideal world, sometimes it's just hard, and that's okay. If we hold to the desire and what is possible, we move closer and closer and closer to it. And in fact, the act of desiring it brings it closer and closer to us so that we're starting to seed our desires into this future state in a way that allows them to grow back towards us in a really concrete way that we then just get to harvest as we move forward.
And I'm thinking too, so for instance, I mean, women are, we're caretakers, and we do a lot for others, our partners, our families, our kids, our careers, and kind of put us in the back burner. And it can feel so, you know, selfish to, well, how could I possibly do that? I've got to take care of other people. But, you know, there's that self-care too of if you're not taking care of yourself and listening to those inner desires, you also aren't going to be there as a full partner or a full mother for your kids and that act of listening to yourself so that you're not cutting yourself short.
Yeah, you're speaking to my morning, Chris. This is in fact, it was downright funny. I was on the phone with my coach, who, you know, brings so much light and wisdom into my world, and we're realizing, you know, this is one of those mornings, and the irony did not escape me that you and I were speaking today about holy hunger and how sacred a concept that is to me and how real and visceral that is for me and in my work. And over the last, I'd say, a couple of weeks, I've just had nothing. You know, even, and I didn't want anything. I feel unmotivated. I'm feeling exhausted. There's kind of nothing worth bothering getting out of bed for. You know, I mean, of course, my family and the stuff of the day. But really looking around and going, what do I want to do right now? What do I want to create? And finding that the well was empty, truly, truly empty. But I was too close to it. And it was when she named, you just want to do some stuff that is just about you. And, you know, we had the close of 2018 was racked with illness in the family, like two different kinds of pneumonia, plus a flu, plus a broken arm. Plus a stomach flu, you know, we just lost the last 8 weeks. 3 weeks of company, which was wonderful, but literally back to back, they'd come in the morning, we'd change the sheets and someone else would come. And while we delighted in every moment, I loved every moment of that, really depleting. And so the other piece with desire, and especially doing this work, is it really struck me there are times when all I want is to be selfish and self-focused for 20 minutes and lay on the floor next to my fire and do nothing more complicated than contemplate the thumbnail on my thumb. And that is of service. I don't know if you know the writer Toko Potten-Turner, but she has one of my favorite, probably my favorite quote of all time anywhere. And I hope I don't butcher it, but I might. But essentially what she says is these things that we feel are selfish are in fact the ways that we are guardians of our generosity. You know, they nurture our generosity. Yeah, I totally butchered it. But Toko Potten-Turner, and there's so much wisdom there in this idea that the only way to nurture our generosity is through self-care and through choosing to turn inward, which requires also, by the way, turning away from the world for a time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in that, selfishness is looking at yourself. That's where you find your gifts that you can then be generous with your gifts to the world. So in order to do that, you have to have that inward journey to know what your gifts are and what your desires are to how to share those gifts because they all take different forms.
Right. And when we're in the season of our life where we're energized and we're feeling vital, and you know, picture the spring season where everything's coming up at once, and we can do both simultaneously, right? We can both be connected both internally and externally, and then we come into the fall and the winter where we necessarily, you know, whether it coincides with the season of the wheel of the year or not, those times where we can only turn inward, and then the summer where we really want to turn outward, and allowing ourselves those cycles and those rhythms that are so innate to our wildness, incredibly important. And it turns out I'm in one of those winters. I'm kind of all turned inward right now. And this morning I realized that's okay.
Well, another aspect, and this ties into this too, is the, and you'll be working on doing this in the workshop, is the five subtle senses. And so intuition and how intuition and how to use creation resonance, you know, so, you know, all that you've been talking about is tuning into that intuition. And so I'd love for you to share more about that, how you work, how you are, how you teach that for people, what people need to do to get in touch with their intuition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is one of my favorite learnings, and this is entirely attributed to my teachers at Lucid Living. So intuition to me was always this very broad concept. It was a thing, you know or you don't, and we talk about it, and it's held as something kind of sacred and kind of mysterious down into five unfamiliar senses, or I call them the subtle senses. And so there are five of them, and I'll just list them. So there's substance, movement, warmth, light, and voice. And so we would recognize, and I'll go through each one. So substance, for example, we might meet somebody and leave saying, oh, that was a person of substance. It's a thing we recognize. We might be able, after the fact, to point to these three things they spoke, or the way they held eye contact, or how they held themselves in an open-hearted way. But in fact, we picked up something in our subtle sense that says, this is a person of substance. We similarly recognize the absence of that, right? I was just talking to somebody and I couldn't figure out where they were. I don't know who they are. There was an absence of substance. There was a lack of substance in this person, which is more just reflective of where they are on their journey. What I know about substance is I feel it in my first chakra, right down at that root chakra is where I sense, it's sort of the sound a mountain makes, right? When you're standing on it, you know that what you're standing upon or what you're looking at is deeper, denser, richer, more substance-filled than anything else around me in a given moment. So that's substance. Movement, similarly, we listen to a beautiful piece of music or whatever magic speaks to each of us, and we can be deeply moved. And for me, that always equates to the waterfall from the idols, right? Like I'm a weeper. And I'm readily and easily moved by the world at large. And I find I'm so regularly enchanted. And so I'm moved. Similarly, I can listen to a piece of music that's equally as beautiful, played all the right notes, but something about it doesn't move me. So that distinction becomes important to our intuition. Also warmth. So we're kind of moving up the chakra system. Movement, I feel, in the second chakra. Warmth is generated in that third chakra for me. So where do I feel that? It's there. The fourth is light. Wow, she's so bright. He's so bright. There's a sense of lightness that they bring, both with respect to a lightness of spirit, but also love and light, an ability to share themselves, to pour themselves out into the world in a way that makes other people feel good. Some people we feel and they're like, wow, he was really cold. I didn't feel anything from him. So that substance, movement, warmth, light for me is the heart chakra. And then voice, sitting right at the throat chakra. What is it that we are hearing? And again, this ties into the substance example I used. I'm not talking about the words out of somebody's mouth or the wind through leaves in a tree, although it might be that. It again is the sound the earth makes, the sound somebody's field makes in a way that resonates with ours. And by that, I mean energetic field. That resonates with ours. And so as we're talking about intuition, as we're talking about growing these things with respect to desire, as we become more masterful and more intentional about drilling deeply into our intuition with these five subtle senses, we can start to discern more readily, hey, this thing that I'm desiring, I'm desiring it because if I really get to my why, because I'm feeling insignificant right now. And I really want to not feel insignificant. And so we're driven by the desire to avoid a thing. And so we will start to notice there's an absence of substance in what it is that we want. We'll notice it doesn't make us feel warm when we think about it. And we'll notice it doesn't sing for us. And then similarly on the flip side, when the desire is true and it's grounded in love for self, for the world, a desire to be of service, then we will feel the substance of that desire. We will feel it move us and stir us into action. We will feel its warmth and its life force invigorate us, and we will feel its light as it starts to glow and shine its light on other things around it so that we know where to direct our attention, and then it just sings. So that's how the intuition, that's where I talk about the unfamiliar senses. We play a lot with those when in groups. And so we might use sound, And most in particular, the silence that follows sound. So in a room that's chanting, for example, or toning, it's when we stop that we can feel the resonance on our skin and in our hair. That's what I want people to experience, because that's where we're tapping into something different and moving into our intuition and noticing substance, movement, warmth, light, and the voice around us.
Well, it sounds wonderful, and I know if people come to the workshop, which is going to be on February 17th, they'll get to experience this. There's a lot here, and thank you so much. And if there's one thing you would like our listeners to take away from this conversation, what would you have them know?
The desire itself is the thing. It's the magic that it works both within ourselves and outside of ourselves, that it actually has an energetic impact into the world, but it's not the thing. It's not the form. It's the act of desire that is most potent. And that's what I think we can forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of like going back to your childhood. We had that wonder, that sense of play as a child, and we let that go and things get serious. And so it's kind of tapping into the child within you, I would think, mm-hmm. to find that, what you call wild hunger.
Yeah. And when done with lightness, because we can think of all this work as so serious, right? And sometimes it's downright ridiculous. And, you know, that's part of the enchantment and the joy. So if you can grow the ability to desire well with practice, devotion, and a lightness of heart and a lightness of being, that just makes it really fun. And what is the feminine? It's not about delight and wonder, enchantment, and fun.
Yes, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So, again, you're going to be given a workshop on February 17th, Rewild mm-hmm. Your Holy Hunger, the Sacred Work of Activating Your Desires. And I know this will resonate with a lot of people because, you know, I know that there's that sense of desire and then that, well, how do I get fulfillment for that desire? How could that even happen? And so it'll be a great exploration for that, for people to do that in our sacred vessel that we create at the Women of Wisdom Conference mm-hmm. every year.
Oh, it's such a special place.
Yeah, and it's a place where women can tell their stories and their witness. So you'll be witnessed and talking about those desires where and one word that came up too, that what can come up, I think, in blocking is that shame and guilt of having these desires. Like, it's not okay for me to have these desires.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm supposed to be about everybody else's desires. Yeah. Shame and guilt are huge parts of this, huge part of the domestication, if you will, of what it's like to want and to be born with, to bear witness to somebody who's standing so vulnerably in their desire and starting to breathe life into it for the first time. It's a beautiful moment, and to be witnessed in that it's such good medicine. And, you know, I believe absolutely that every woman who heals herself heals the woman that will come after and the women that have come before. And that's what this is. This is one of the portals through which we can accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so true. So please give your website so people can find out more about
Thanks.
You.
So it's Del Dukes, which is a convoluted mashup of my name. So DelDukes.com. And that landing page, my website is under construction, which is super fun and exciting. But this gives a very good flavor of what I'll be talking about. And it's all about desire, a journey back to the heart of you. So.
Okay, great. So everybody can go to the Women of Wisdom website, womenofwisdom.org. Mm-hmm. And look at the 2019 conference and all the offerings we have. You can register for Saturday. You can register for a full day on Sunday, or you can register for both days. And we also have, it includes meals and community activities. Like, we're all going to have our meal. Everybody who's there on Saturday will have lunch and dinner together. We have a great banquet. And we're going to have a fabulous singer, Naomi Wachira. And she's from Kenya and just a beautiful voice, an Afro folk singer. And also Sakun Neminya is from Burundi, and she's going to tell her story. And which is, she's amazing. She's done TED Talks, and so that's going to be a very powerful evening. And Friday night, we have a single event that anybody can, you can buy tickets for, and men are invited, is a musical written by Pamela Durkee, who has done several musicals at Women of Wisdom, and it's about the life of Florence Nightingale, and it's her 200th birthday in 2019. And so we are opening our conference with this beautiful musical about Florence Nightingale. So check it all out at womanofwisdom.org, and registration is open. And invite your friends. This is fun to do with a friend. A lot of people come alone by themselves. It's an inward journey, but it's also fun to share with somebody. And you'll be making new friends there. I mean, it's a great place to find the connections with other people in between workshops, during workshops, and just some fabulous people that you will meet there. So we invite you all to come February 15th through the 17th at Seattle, North Seattle College in Seattle, Washington. And so I'll be back in a couple more days. And during this month, I'm interviewing more presenters. So stay tuned and you can check it out of the schedule. I'll be posting daily of who I'll be interviewing at the Blog Talk Radio Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. So everybody have a great day, and we'll be back soon.